In a world where more and more of our time is being spent online, wouldn't online friendships only seem natural? Sure, it might look different than traditional friendship, where we actually see each other in person. Is it time for our idea of friendship to catch up, or is it possible that online friendships can never be the same as sitting face-to-face? Our next guest tackles those questions in a recent piece in the New York Times. Stephen Asma is a professor of philosophy and founding fellow of the research group in Mind, Science, and Culture at Columbia College Chicago. He's the author of several books, including his latest, The Emotional Mind. He wrote the piece, "This Friendship Has Been Digitized," for the New York Times. Stephen, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, what started you thinking about digital friendship versus, in-person friendship?
Well, I have a son who's around 15 years old, and I was watching him playing a video game with his friends online, and, you know, he's jumping around with the controller, and I was talking to him about it, and he's playing with his friend. Now, his friend is named Scuzzball. You know, they all have these kind of internet monikers, and there's like a little avatar picture of the kid, and I said, "Oh, who is this guy?" And he said, "Oh, he's been playing with him for a few years." I'd heard the name before too. I said, "What do you know about him?" And he said, "Oh, he lives in France." And then he was like, no, he lives in Canada. And then I find out, well, he doesn't know what age he is. He doesn't know where he lives. He doesn't know anything about him. And then when I was sort of teasing him about this, his friend was actually replaced in the game by an artificial intelligence robot. So when you leave the game, let's say his friend has to go to dinner or something, all of a sudden, a robot comes in and just starts playing and finishes that sort of tour of duty with you. And my son wasn't bothered in the least that his friend was replaced by an AI robot. And I thought, well, in what sense are they friends? Like, it's so different from the kind of friendship that old folks like me grew up with. So that's what got me thinking about it.
And you start, in a way, by using your philosophy background to try to break down, well, what is a friend? So skipping right. The video games for now and the digital media world, what are some of the key characteristics of being a friend?
Well, one of the sort of key philosophical ideas on friendship comes from Aristotle. And he said there were three kinds of friendships. One was a friendship of pleasure. This is just your buddy who you like to go out partying with, but you wouldn't share the deep stuff with them. And then there's friendships of utility, where you use them, they use you, sort of like the work friendship where you have to solve, you know, issues together. Maybe you need a ride and then you can cook for them or something. And then finally, there's this deeper friendship, which he says is where you care about the other person for her sake or for his sake, not for anything that you get out of it. And so I start by looking at this idea. And then I agree, this is very old-fashioned. Does the digital life change this stuff? And I came up with three criteria for defining a friendship. I said, you have to have shared experience. So in other words, you have to do things together. Two, you have to have some kind of loyalty or some kind of bonding. And three, you have to have a shared mental experience you can share in each other's mental life, shared intentionality. And you can see, like, when your dog, you might think your dog is your friend, and you come in after a long day at work and your dog curls up next to you, and there's no doubt your dog is loyal. You know, nothing's more loyal than a dog. But your dog can't tell that you didn't get that. You can't tell your dog, I didn't get that promotion at work. I'm thinking about becoming an atheist. I don't like the current politics. The dog can't enter into your mental life. And so I think you need these three ingredients all together to have a real friendship.
So let's apply that to the online world now. Now, it seems like it might be hard to pull off with, say, a shooting game like your son was playing, but there's a lot of different ways we connect on forums, on social media, things like that. Can we satisfy those objectives of friendship online and purely online?
Well, I think people are confused about the kind of pleasures that we're having online and in friendships. And one of the things that happens when you're engaged online is you get a spike of dopamine. So it feels good, you know, when you're sort of having a good social media experience with your friends or even playing these games. But bonding or loyalty is a different set of neurochemicals and neurotransmitters. Like, that's basically a product of oxytocin and internal opioids like endorphins. And those are the things that don't get triggered as much during sort of online life. So I definitely think there's a degree here. Like if you're having a face-to-face experience with a friend, like you're both...
Speak to the Christians who you know in Sri Lanka. Do
just
they
a moment.
See this as...
Okay, some weird technical quirks here. Sorry, please do go on.
That's right. So like if you're having a face-to-face experience with friends like at summer camp, that's a very high oxytocin, high endorphin sort of experience. But then you can imagine like a next layer down or next degree down would be like embodied or virtual reality kinds of experiences where you have the goggles, you have the suit on, and you and your friend who's in another country are solving some problem together. That's got a lot of embodied, you know, oxytocin endorphins as well. Then you could go another layer down, and that would be like playing console games and app games where it's not quite as embodied as these other forms. And then finally, something like social media or email, where you're just liking each other's posts or you have sort of a pen pal. That can be very satisfying, and it's a kind of friendship, but it's not as embodied as these other forms.
Talking to Stephen Asma, professor of philosophy at Columbia College, Chicago. Talk about a piece he wrote in the New York Times about friendship, digital friendship, online friendship versus the other, more familiar kind. Stephen, one thing you mentioned in that earlier philosophical definition of friendship is somebody being caring for you when you need it. If I can quote a popular treatise on friendship, I'll be there for you. From the theme song to Friends, are we getting that from a digital friend, a social media friend, in a way that we might give from an in-person friend? You give the example of, you know, that person who brings you soup when you're sick.
Yeah, it's a good question. I've been trying to find some kind of measure of this among younger people, you know, teens who are using the media a lot. And the example I came up with was okay, you have friends but how many people would come and, you know, bring you soup tonight if you were sick and you called them up? And I was asking my students, college students, this question. They were laughing at me because they said, well, I don't have to have anybody. I can just call Uber Eats or Grubhub and they'll just deliver it to me. And I got to thinking about this. And there is this phenomenon in Japan now of very intense social isolation called hikikomori. And these are young people. They're not old timers. They're young people, and they're living as recluses. They work on computer at home. They sort of engage with their so-called friends online. They have all their food ordered to them, and they never leave their houses. So one worry I have is the young people, you know, in their teens, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z rather. They might not know the difference between what they're calling a friendship and this more sort of dedicated, loyal experience where the person will make big sacrifices for you. So that's unclear.
Steve, one thing I love about your piece is you spend most of it skeptical about online friendship. But at the end, you try to flip things around and make the case that, well, maybe we need to change the way we think of friendship. So I guess make the counter argument, even if you don't quite buy it.
Yeah, I've been called the Steven Spielberg of op-eds because I have this sort of happy ending on this piece where I basically look at it's a pretty amazing case of this young man named Matt Steen who had muscular dystrophy, and he's living in the Netherlands, if I recall correctly. Now, his body is degenerating in terms of what he can do, and eventually he can't leave the house. Or his wheelchair, but he's living a very fulfilled life in digital space. He's a well-respected and loved character in World of Warcraft. He has these devoted friends who don't know anything about his illness. And then this is really the optimistic point is that after this young man died, and of course that's tragic, but what was remarkable was that his friends came from all around Europe to the funeral to pay their respects to him. And the reason why this is optimistic is it suggests that there was some deep bonding that occurred for them, even entirely through this sort of digital medium. So, you know, that's at least one case where you can see something substantial happening and the sort of magic of friendship happening despite no face-to-face contact.
We're talking to Stephen Asma, a professor of philosophy and founding fellow of the research group in mind, science, and culture at Columbia College, Chicago. He wrote the piece, "This Friendship Has Been Digitized," for the New York Times, looking at in-person friendship versus online friendship. You can join in at 800-642-1110. 1, 2, 3, 4. Do you feel like you have online-only friends who maybe mean as much to you as, I don't want to say the real thing if you think that, but as what we think of as a friend? Do you have circles of friends on gaming sites, say, or on social media? Or do you worry that we spend too much time online with people we know, not enough time in person, that we can't fulfill the functions of friendship online only? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Stephen Asma. He's a professor of philosophy at Columbia College Chicago. He wrote the piece, "This Friendship Has Been Digitized," for the New York Times. We're talking about how the digital world has changed our idea of friendship. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have friends that you only talk with online, or maybe that you keep up with online? Does it feel the same as getting together with a person? Do you worry that we spend too much time with our online friends, not enough time with our friends in person? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Steve, is there a happy meeting point here where you could see some people are using that social media to stay in touch and to arrange that get-together with maybe their gaming friends or the people in the club or the friends from high school or whatever? Can we use the two back and forth to support each other?
Yeah, I think it's true that especially if you've already forged a friendship with someone, then online life is really... It really amplifies those connections. It's really fun to stay in contact with people and to stay on top of what they're doing. But frequently that works best when you already have some kind of bond, like, okay, you went to school with this person, or you were classmates, you were in a sports team together, or maybe you're in a music group or something. Those kinds of connections can only be strengthened. But my concern is whether or not you can build a really lasting and deep friendship from the ground up in digital space, entirely online. And I know that people claim they have, and they do, but I have my doubts about this, I guess. I am skeptical. I mean, I suppose if my Facebook started slowly being replaced by AI bots, I'm not sure I would notice, and I'm not sure this would be that troubling, because it would just be, you know, cat video, funny meme, political rant, repeat, and, you know, this kind of thing.
Let's bring on a caller now. We've got David on the line in Madison. David, hi.
Good afternoon.
What do you want to tell us about, David?
Well, my wife is very active on social media, and, you know, she's had the experience of meeting a lot of people all over the world. And some of that has led to, you know, in phone conversations and even the prospect of, you know, going to visit. So I think, contrary to what your guest was just saying, I think that at least in her experience, she's actually finding this really rewarding to be able to meet people online and develop relationships.
I got to ask, David, is your wife the kind of person who in person is really good at meeting people and, turning strangers into friends?
Well, I think it's selectively. I think that's true. Yes.
All right, David, thank you so much for that call. So people, maybe with the impetus, Steve, can start with that online point and gradually, like, you'd build a friendship with maybe, I don't know, a coworker, maybe build that online friendship into something bigger.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I mean, oftentimes, in this sense, I see social media is sort of like what the phone was, you know, back in the day. You used the phone frequently to set up a meeting with your friends, and then you got together with them and you had all the kind of bonding that I'm talking about here. But sometimes people just, they don't want to meet in person. The phone conversation is enough. My own fear is that phone conversations and digital experiences online are much safer, much more comfortable, much more less threatening. And my worry is that people will prefer that because they want to be comfortable and safe all the time. But real friendship requires this, like, messy emotional entanglement. And it's not always comfortable. And sometimes you have to serve your friend, and it's not convenient. And that's my worry, is that people who might tend towards isolation might be more isolated, and maybe more gregarious people will simply use it as a tool to meet others.
David, thanks for the call. Going out to Kylie with us in Sparta. Kylie, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Kylie?
Well, as I told your screener, I have a little bit of a different perspective. I am on the autism spectrum, and so the social media aspect is actually awesome for me. Although everybody on my social media is someone I do know in real life, but as far as staying with communicating with those people, if I didn't have social media, that really wouldn't happen as much for me.
Kylie, do you feel more comfortable interacting with people on social media than you might in person?
Yeah, a lot more. 'Cause I don't have to, you know, there's just so many other things that, like, when you're out and about that you just have to pick up on with conversations. And if you're doing something at the same time, you know, like if you go out bowling, you know, you can't really focus on any conversations or anything, like, because there's just so much going on, you know?
Mm-hmm. Kylie, thank you so much for sharing that story. So in Kylie's case, Steve, she does interact. These are people she's known in person, but this is kind of a level playing field for interacting online in some ways.
Yeah, I support that entirely. And I do think there are these sort of unique or special cases. I mean, there's a wonderful autism conference where the various people who go will wear a badge. And if they flip the badge towards one color, like red, then it means, you know, I'm willing to have a conversation, you know, feel free to approach me. And if you flip the badge to the other color, let's say blue, it's saying, you know, I'm not feeling like I want to talk to people right now. And this strikes me as a wonderful technique, not just for people on the autism spectrum, but anybody who's shy and introverted. And so I can totally get that digital space and interaction is a kind of safe and very comfortable place to build relationships. I guess my general point still stands that I think you end up getting a bit more, you know, of this kind of bonding when you have shared, you know, embodied space. But I take the caller's point. It's an excellent point.
Kylie, thanks a lot for sharing your experience. We're talking to Stephen Asma, philosophy professor from Columbia College Chicago, looking at online friendships and real-life friendships, offline friendships, and what we might be missing. And Steve, I think a key point you're making, I don't think at any point in your piece you say, don't do the online stuff. You're more worried about it crowding out everything else and what we might lose.
That's right. I mean, one sort of view would be that you can't have friendships at all and you should stay away from being online. It's more rather that people are drawn to this kind of interaction because it's providing the kind of dopamine hit that, frankly, that something like cocaine provides people. I mean, it's actually, you know, there's actually child care. The American Academy of Pediatrics has sort of warned against internet gaming disorder. And the reason why they're saying is because it's incredibly addicting. Now, the reason why that's a problem is because it's drawing you away from going out and doing other things like playing with your friends outside or engaging in other activities. You simply get drawn in and it replaces the other kinds of sort of paradigms of friendship that we have.
Do you, Steve, see maybe your son, your students having a backlash, maybe saying, hey, we do need more time in person with each other?
I actually gave my students an assignment, which was to do a digital diet, which means 2 days, no phone, and then they have to write about what they experienced. And the result was fascinating. Many of them were at first incredibly irritated, and it was like they were going through withdrawal, you know, just very upset and anxious, you know, just expecting some great text is coming, some email, but then eventually they realized, oh, they were attending more carefully to their families who were members who were talking to them. They were actually sort of more involved in the family life that was happening in the home. And many of them recognized that it was making them more present in the world to be off the digital devices, even for a short time, like 2 days.
What is your worry? I don't want to end necessarily on a negative note, but what is your worry if we do keep moving toward replacing in-person friendships with online friendships? Where do you see us going, not just as individuals, but as a society?
Well, I think the scary thing is that other technological advances are coming online here sort of in the wings, one of which is robotics, and the other of which is increasingly complex AI, so that the level of interaction with artificial intelligence will be increasingly sophisticated. So what I'm worried about is people will get off from work. In 20 years, I can imagine people coming home from work and they have a robot instead of a husband or a wife. And that robot is, you know, programmed to say just the right things to make you feel good enough to get to the next day. And that's the kind of creepy, you know, vaguely, you know, Aldous Huxley, George Orwell potential that's there. I don't know whether that's going to happen, but it's a possibility.
And leave us with an optimistic note. Do you think we will steer clear of that vaguely dystopian outcome?
Well, I think this, even this little experiment I did with my students where they did the digital diet, I'm beginning to see that young people are taking breaks themselves. That, you know, they're putting a control on their phone that stops it after so many hours. They're even some of the designers in Silicon Valley are trying to create apps that will put you back out into the world, not back into the games over and over again. So I think we're getting a little wiser over the last few years, and I think that trend could continue.
Stephen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Stephen Asma is professor of philosophy and founding fellow of the research group in Mind, Science, and Culture at Columbia College, Chicago. He's the author of several books, including his latest, The Emotional Mind. He talked with us about our changing friendships in the digital age. You can find his piece, This Friendship Has Been Digitized, for the New York Times. Coming up after the news, we'll visit with a self-described edible insect ambassador who's bringing his message of eating bugs here to Wisconsin.